biggest stories, the best names, and all the big breaking news. The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon is on right now. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Welcome inside. It is the Big Show on your Tuesday, January 11th. My name is Will Nault, live inside the iconic Electric End Controls downtown studio today and every day. Iconic Electric End Controls, currently hiring in Calgary and across Alberta with competitive wages, extended benefits. Visit iconicec.ca/careers. Several ways to listen to us, 960 on your AM dial. Stream us at sportsnet.ca/960. Tell your smart speaker to play Sportsnet 960. And of course, all our podcasts are now available on Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. Subscribe now and never miss a moment. A busy 3 hours of sports talk coming for you. Glad to have you on board. The Flames are back in action on Thursday with the Sens in town. Calgary's playing a home game for the first time in over a month. Last time they played at the Scotiabank Saddledome was December 11th against the Boston Bruins. Thursday will mark just their 12th home game of the year. It'll be 50% capacity with no food or drink sales. I thought I would mention that because we had a couple of texts that came in yesterday asking us what the status was with fans at the Dome. Could they go watch? What was the deal? And I know Eric Francis had a member of the Flames office on Monday talking in regards to tickets. If you are in possession of said tickets, you've likely been contacted by the Flames, so you will know if your tickets are still good. If you've had a ticket to a game that's been postponed or canceled, they'll be in contact with you to discuss what's up with that. And again, you know, for example, the Islander game that was supposed to be tonight, when that game is rescheduled in Calgary, whether it be in February, later on this month, or in March, your ticket for January 11th will still be eligible for whatever day that game is rescheduled for. And as we dive into the Calgary Flames and more, it's just after 1 o'clock, which means it's time to welcome in our leadoff hitter on the Big Show. He is Peter Labardius, and Lou joins us every day for the Gemini Group. Home renovations. Your home renovation should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group, now offering air miles, reward miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca. Lou, how are you, pal?
I got to work on my speed if I'm going to be in the leadoff spot.
Oh, no. Not a base stealer?
But, oh, absolutely. Especially not these days. But I'll tell you what.
What about the hit and run?
Oh, I could drop down a heck of a bunt in my day. I can tell you that. You know, where moving runners actually mattered in the sport like it does in the playoffs?
Ayo.
Oh, sorry. Anyway.
But what about ball velocity or exit velocity or whatever they call it, Lou? Come on.
Why would you do that?
Yeah. It's all about...
you know what you can do with exit velocity,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I sure do.
Yep.
I absolutely do. You can stick it where the sun don't shine.
Well, you know, I think it still counts the same when it goes over the fence.
Yeah, one is one, right? I mean, that's...
I mean, it is neat. I will say that of all, you know, the metrics, my favorite word, metrics, I thought that was just a system when we changed from Fahrenheit to Celsius, but that dates me just a tad. That one isn't the worst one in the world, that's for sure.
Well, let's dive in and talk a little hockey. What a start to the program, as always. I love it. Lou, team back at the ice for practice, and it's funny because I've been thinking about this a lot, and I know we talked briefly yesterday about, you know, the schedule and the fact that right now it's quite spread out. We don't know when the, you know, the re-release of the schedule is going to come out. The Flames will have, you know, a lot of hockey to be played here in the next couple of months, and a lot of that will be done at home. They have just one game left in the Eastern time zone, which is good news for them. There's going to be some travel, but it won't be as intense as what we saw early on in the season, which will be a benefit for them. But all that being said, a very broad question. You can take it kind of wherever you want, but just more or less the topic. As this team gets set for the stretch drive here and they play a lot of hockey in a condensed amount of time, how much is going to be relied upon it, and how much is the spotlight going to be on this team's depth?
Well, this team, and, you know, depth is an interesting word, and it's defined differently, well, by certain people in terms of, you know, there's depth scoring. There's, you know, depth. I think the best area of depth for this team when they're playing well is they've had players, you know, who know what their roles are and they do it well. That's when this team has been at its best. It's going to be really important, but it's really important for this team all the time, Will, as you know, because, you know, if you don't necessarily have elite game breakers, then your depth, and I'd use a different phrase, my friend, your team play, your play as a team,
mm-hmm.
and your identity and playing to your identity. That, for me, is going to be incredibly important for this team. And I don't think at this point now, you know, and we may get into it, my friend, in the next few days or in the next few weeks, we're going to get into it for sure. This team has one very difficult situation to deal with, in my opinion. And that is, how do you go forward with Johnny Gaudreau? And what do you pay him? But in terms of your original question, this team is a team that needs to be able to play all their people. And when they do, and they get good efforts out of them, they're a very competitive team. So, yes, in a nutshell, it is going to be probably more important for this group than it might be for some others. But, you know, look at some of the teams, well, that they've just played. You don't think Carolina doesn't truly have depth right through their forward group and their defense?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, and even that Tampa group, I know you made mention of it. I think it was on the broadcast, whether it was pregame or it was probably postgame, though, after we saw that line play. I know they lost, you know, the Coleman and Barkley Goodrow and, you know, Yanni Gord. Yeah, all those players were gone, but they've replaced them with, you know, the Matthew Josephs of the world, the Kachuks of the world. And that was a line that, you know, is showing you that, you know, they've got that depth. And you know, even a team like Tampa, who has some of the best high-end skill in the game today, they have a very strong team game at times, too. And they need it when they're
really
at their best.
You do. And really, when you think about Tampa, you know, you made mention of, you know, that group with Radish and you know, Joseph and Boris Kachuk, you know, all guys who played for Canada at the World Junior Championship. And it's good because we're going to get into another topic a little later. But really, well, even looking back at that game the other night and the line that you mentioned that they lost, don't you think the Perry Belmar Maroon group has done a fine, fine job in a very similar situation?
Yeah, I don't think Belmar gets enough love.
No,
really
he doesn't.
Don't. Yeah.
No. And, you know, I mean, Corey's got 11 or 12 goals now. And, you know, we're all in a hurry, you know, to see young people. But the key about seeing young people is understanding, you know, you want to see young people when they're ready. And the thing that has always impressed me so much about Tampa is when you talk about Joseph and Kachuk and Radish, well, those aren't 19 or 20-year-old guys.
No.
Those are guys that have spent 2 or 3 years primarily in the American League. So now you've learned the game. You know, you're in a great culture. They do a great job in their American League. And you generally don't ever pay the price for allowing young people, you know, to get seasoned and learn how to be a pro and learn how to, you know, live on your own and manage on your own. Those things are really, really, really important. So, you know, going back to the Flames, you know, I think the difference with them going forward is, Can you get back to that earlier level that you were at? I think they can. But in order to, and that's why I actually like this week, because what I'm never a big fan of, and you don't get to pick and choose, right? When you're on a roll, you want to play every second day. You really do. But if your game and its details have slipped, not a ton, but a little, I actually think this is a good situation for the Flames before they play again on Thursday. Because I do feel like between the pause, travel, you know, we talked about it yesterday, they could use a reset. Because this team's margin for error is not what some other teams are.
Mm-hmm.
So your details and how you play is so important for this particular group with its makeup right now.
Well, and you know, let's go to the Darryl Sutter clip now. You just mentioned it in terms of developing and you know, getting guys to learn how to be pros. And, you know, I think as fans, it's like anything in this world. It doesn't even relate to just sports, anything.
100%.
We want it now. We want it now.
Yes.
We want it immediately. We don't have the patience to wait and let things, you know, flourish. And here's Darryl Sutter asked today about the thought about, you know, this team's depth and secondary scoring and his, you know, American Hockey League team, the Stockton Heat, have had a lot of success this year. They've got guys who are in top three, top five, top 10 when it comes to scoring in the American Hockey League. Here's Darryl Sutter when asked about call-ups from Stockton.
Because that's where they develop. It's really important as an organization that we do a thorough job of that. So when players, you don't just call guys up and then not let them have success. You want them to have 1 or 2 years of success for sure. It's a big jump from, you're talking about, you're looking at Jacob, right, and saying, well, he's up there and scoring. Well, there's a big difference between the American Hockey League and the NHL, especially if you're a first-year pro and you're undersized. Jacob Pelche is an awesome, awesome kid he's got a great mindset for the game and energy for the game, but it's quite a bit different if you're not an elite scorer at this level, such as somebody like Johnny, and you're playing against guys that are 40 to 50 pounds bigger than you, you're going to have trouble. And you just got to mature and develop. That's for sure what Belcher will do.
And I love that he brought up Johnny Gaudreau, and you even talked about that, Lou. Like, unless you're in that elite category, it's important to have that time down there. And, you know, Johnny Gaudreau was a fourth-round pick. He was picked lower because of his size, but he's an elite skill set. And it's not to say that Jacob Pelche isn't elite in his own right, but he's not going to come up here and be a 99-point guy like Gaudreau has been in the past. And so
no.
I think that's important to realize here.
Well, and there's another thing, too. So, you know, we talked about the marinating process. Well, when you think about some of the best organizations in the NHL, and we talked about one example already with Tampa, you know, that's where you want to get to. The other thing is that's really important for that group that Mitch Love, who I'm very high on and have been for a number of years now, you know, that's 21-5-3. Well, they go to the rink now every night expecting to win. That's a good thing. And you have people that you can grow together. That's a good thing, too. So, you know, when I think about Pelche and Zeri and Mackey and, you know, go on down the list, having success, playing the right number of minutes is not going to just translate overnight to this league. It doesn't. There are just very few cases where, okay, here's another example off the top of my head. How's Jordan Kyrou playing right now in St. Louis?
He's all the talk of the St. Louis Blues right now.
Okay, did he necessarily come up at 20 years old after a great junior career and immediately make his mark? Or did they give him some time to grow?
I believe he had about 60 games in the American League.
Yes. You know, and again, there's another world junior guy, Jacob Pelche, Connor Zeri. They're world junior players. Now, different players. But that going through that process is just so important as players and people. And no, you know, be mad at me if you want. Don't think because you're playing great at the American League level that that automatically makes you better than somebody on, if you will, a fourth line at the NHL level. It doesn't. You don't have the experience. You don't know the league as well. You don't. And the funny thing is, well, you know, we talk all the time, and for good reason, okay, about high-end guys. Well, you know, I think two of the most overrated or underrated, pardon me, slotted positions are your number five and six guys on the back end. It's not easy to be those guys playing, you know, 12 to 14 minutes. And you have to be rock solid and absolutely look after, you know, your responsibilities in that area. Those are important roles. You know, it hasn't been perfect for this group, but I would far rather have Connor Mackey or Juuso Välimäki, who got banged up, unfortunately, by the way, the other night, you know, playing more minutes in all situations and feeling great about their game. Because, well, take Oliver Shillington for an example, okay? So I don't think, listen, did I see this coming? No. Did I see the talent? Yes. Did he spend a long time down there? Yes. But the fact of the matter is, Oliver's experience going through the process and even going through those first 80 games in a position where every night when you're out there, it feels like life and death, that's hard. But he's put himself in a position where would I now be surprised at 26 or 27 if he doesn't really take another step and emerge? No. It doesn't it's what you said. It doesn't have to happen now.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a better chance it never works out if you rush it.
Agreed. You're at least giving yourself a chance of success if you give it a little bit of time, because I know Daryl talked about it as well today, that, you know, the dangers of doing it immediately is you crush a guy's confidence and he never gets it back. And
no, you don't.
I don't have to tell you about the C word, because that's all you talk about. And well, it works in every, you know, in every profession, in every walk of life. If you're not confident in what you're doing, you're probably not going to have success, regardless of your skill set.
How much better a broadcaster are you today than 6 or 7 years ago?
Not even close.
How come?
I was terrified of turning a mic on. And now it doesn't have that same fear.
No, you've been put in a lot of different situations.
Yep.
You're in another one right now.
Yeah, like, I've played in a lot of leagues, Lou.
Well, you've stayed in one league at one level for a while, but you're right. You've been on a bunch of different lines or a bunch of different D pairings, but all of that makes you better, you know. And it's not always the most fun when you're anxious and you want more, but generally with the time and experience and going through the struggles, you learn a lot, so that when you get in a position, you're more ready. And you're right. And I'm glad you look at it that way, because that is the case in so many places where, listen, I don't care whether it's our industry or the hockey industry. You know, I was watching 14-year-olds again play hockey on the weekend.
Yeah, how many games do you watch, by the way?
Oh, I don't know. I saw three on Sunday. I know that.
Come on, tripleheader.
Come on, tripleheader. But, you know, the skill of these young people is like, makes me laugh almost every time I go to a really good game, like especially the one I saw between NAX and Edge. Sunday afternoon, but there's a long way to go.
Yeah.
A long, long way to go.
He's Peter Laborius. He is our leadoff hitter every day here on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Mr. Gordon?
I guess I just have one thing on the conversation that you and Will were having there, Lou, and I guess it's sometimes the thought process of that maybe we get spoiled nowadays because we have such young guys, not just in Calgary, but, you know, the Flames have had a few, but the NHL as a whole has, it seems like, a handful of these young players that come in at 18 years old and are able to make such tremendous impacts, where maybe we have to reset our thinking back to the fact that those are the outliers and not the norm, and maybe look, even from a local perspective, say, at Rasmus Anderson, a guy that, you know, spent, you know, two seasons of playing 50-plus games with the Stockton Heat and going up and down and having to learn the process. I think I always catch myself doing that as well, because you see, you know, a guy like Owen Power, who could absolutely play in the NHL nowadays, but made a decision to go back to college and continue to develop and go into these situations. But he's an outlier. He's not the norm of prospect.
No, he's not. And, you know, you even take a look at a player that I'm so, so impressed by. You know, he's played 9 games in the league. That's Mason McTavish, the 3rd overall pick. But after 9 games, great introduction, 3 points, you know, handled himself well. Are you still ready to do it full time? That's a lot. There just are not very many 18 or 19 year olds that are ready to play. There just aren't. Sometimes there seems like there are, but there really isn't. You know, take a look almost every year with the best teams, you know, at the World Junior. How many kids are really, you know, they might come in and play for a few games. Jake Neighbors, Mason McTavish, you know, but there's not a lot of Jamie Drysdales, who at 19 and even at 18 was playing 18 minutes on defense in the NHL. That's rare. Are the kids better than they ever have been skill-wise? Not even close. Not even close. But there's way more to it than just that.
I don't know if you would agree with this or not, but the one guy that always comes to mind when we have these conversations, specifically in Calgary, was when Sven Berchi came up on his emergency recall all those years ago, Lou, and had that tremendous showing offensively. And I think, I don't know that the emergency recall was necessarily the problem, or, you know, I don't want to put it all on that, but that's the situation that reminds me so much of, you know, here's a young guy and he had this explosion on an emergency recall and got everybody excited and hyping him up and, you know, counting the days till he was an NHLer so he could come in and do that every single day. And that was probably an unfair expectation to put on him and maybe change the trajectory of how the organization looked at him and his path to the NHL.
Well, let's take a more recent example. Okay. And that's a beauty, Logan. I love that one. So, you know, you take Sven, right? So first of all, you don't even think that season that you're ever going to play that year. So you go in there, you know, playing junior in Portland at an incredibly high level, feeling great about yourself. There's really little expectation on you, and you get off to a great start. You know, you're having the time of your life. But what happens when it turns? Look at some recent examples of really good young players. Was it really easy for Quinn Hughes last year? I don't think so.
Or his brother?
Or his brother Jack? Was that easy off the get-go? Are they incredible talents? Yeah, they are. And they're going to be really dynamite players for a long time. But it's playing at a young age, in the National Hockey League requires a lot. And, you know, the amount of Matthews and, you know, McDavid's and, you know, even Leon Draisaitl. Leon Draisaitl finished his 19-year-old season in the Western League, went to a Memorial Cup with Kelowna. So, you know, the last time I checked, he's pretty good. It's hard. It is. There are very few impact makers in the NHL 19 years of age and under. Very few.
Well, I remember, I'm sure you do, Lou, there was a day where a Detroit Red Wing prospect didn't play a regular season game at all until he had spent time in the AHL. That was just that was the rule.
Tampa's kind of like that now a little bit, too.
Yep.
You know, and the thing that you have to remember, too, you know, and you put the Flames, for the most part, in this category. How many top 10 picks have the Flames had in recent memory? There's a few, but there's not a lot. And, you know, generally in this day and age, you know, not to say that you can't hit in other places, but unless you're in that like really high window, and that also depends on the draft year. You know, it's not every year that the same amount of guys make the NHL out of the draft. And it's never been, in a sense, easier to do it. And not because they're ready hockey-wise, Logan, because it works money-wise. And you can't forget about that either. But Detroit, what was it? They went from like 1991 to when they picked Michael Rasmussen out of Tri-City, which was like, I think 2017 or 2016. They went that long in between top 10 picks. They seem to do okay, but they're different time, different, no cap, all of that. But, you know, as Tampa has done the best they can, you don't have to get there tomorrow, but when you do get there, be ready. That's what good organizations, that's really what you aim to do.
Of course, we'll have a lot of time to chew on the Sens. We get closer to game day on Thursday. It's kind of crazy. I know that we've talked around it a lot of bit, and we, you know, started off the conversation with talking about how condensed the schedule is going to be here, Lou. But home game number 12 on Thursday.
Oh, isn't it? It's crazy. The
imbalance. Are we in January or are we in November?
Probably should be in November, but that's
crazy.
Well, I will say this: February and March. Going to be a lot of activity over at that.
A lot of home cooking.
Cowboy hat shaped building over there.
Lou, good stuff as always. Enjoy
Thanks,
the rest
guys.
Of your Tuesday. We'll talk to you tomorrow, pal.
Have a great day, fellas. Bye-bye.
He is Peter Labardius every day to kick off the big show at 1 o'clock, and he does so for the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit thegeminigroup.ca. Now offering air miles, reward miles. We'll take a break. When we come back, I feel like my co-host Logan nailed it. Just want to give him a little bit of credit. We spent yesterday, at least a portion of it, crushing his L.A. Chargers, and deservedly so. But today, it's a pat on the back. He called it. He wished for it. He willed it to happen, and it did. What a dandy last night in Indianapolis. We'll talk about that and more as we continue in Hour 1 of The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon is on now. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Then they reverse it with Billingsley back to the right. Snap to Young. Drops back. Pressure from the edges. He throws near sideline. And it's intercepted. Intercepted. Keely Ringo at the 21. Off he goes. 40, 50, 45, 40, 35, 30. Near sideline. Breaks the tackle. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. 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 Georgia. 54 seconds to go. Keely Ringo with about a 75-yard return. No flags. 32-18. Let the celebration begin.
That was in the final minute of the fourth quarter yesterday, the national championship game between Alabama and Georgia. And boy, what a game it was. We talked about it all yesterday. Were we going to get a better game? What we saw just over a month ago at the SEC Championship in Atlanta. In that game, the Crimson Tide destroyed the Bulldogs, and quarterback Bryce Young, while he destroyed the Georgia defense and secured his Heisman Trophy win with an unreal performance. Well, boy, did we get a gem of a football game last night in Indianapolis. The Crimson Tide and Bulldogs went shot for shot in the title game. Welcome back to the Big Show. I'm Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon, live from the iconic Electric End Controls downtown studio, where they treat every employee like family, an iconic family. Apply to join the team at iconicec.ca/careers. Logan, it did not start out as the most entertaining game. I mean, it was a great defensive battle on both sides, don't get me wrong, but it did not start out the way that it finished. The two teams played well. It was a field goal contest in the first half. In fact, there were four field goals combined in the second quarter, five field goals total in the first 30 minutes. Late in the third quarter, we got our first touchdown as Georgia scored to make it 13-9 going into the fourth. And the fourth quarter is where this game blew up. It was almost like the whole game jammed into one quarter. Georgia outscoring the Crimson Tide 20-9 in the fourth quarter. Nick Saban telling his former assistant coach, now the head coach at Georgia, Kirby Smart, after the game, "You kicked our bleep in the fourth quarter." Stetson Bennett's fumble or non-fumble, however you want to look at it, that could have been costly, but he responded and went 4 for 4 for 83 yards and two touchdowns in the final two drives for his team. Before we dive really deep into this contest, just quickly on that one, Logan, I still don't know why that was called a fumble.
Yeah, I don't either. It was one of the weirdest plays that you've seen. I don't quite understand how they came to that decision in the biggest game of the year, but I guess I don't know what you're really looking to say there. It was like everybody on the field thought it was incomplete, except apparently the refs. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that one out. Like nobody on that play even reacted like it was a fumble. I was gonna say,
don't even worry about the fumble or non fumble. How about the fact that the Alabama player who recovered it had a foot on the sideline? What?
Yeah, I
think I watched that like 12 times, and I'm like, I'm sorry. Is the toe not a part of the foot? Is that not on the white sideline? What are we seeing here? And the player had no urgency to recover the fumble because, as you just said, it felt like everyone playing that game didn't think it was a fumble. It was a bizarre play and could have been a major turning point in that game, as shortly after the Crimson Tide scored a touchdown to take a lead and you felt like, oh no, that was maybe going to be the decider in this game. Thankfully, it wasn't. I mentioned Stetson Bennett's turnaround, 4 for 4, 83 yards, and two touchdowns, including a 40-yard bomb to Adonai Mitchell. One of the best plays you'll see, an unreal throw, and maybe a better catch in the end zone.
Yeah, for Bennett, you're talking about, you know, and you could see the emotion on him post-game, and he was talking about, you know, wanting to be there for his team, and when they needed him in those big moments, he absolutely stepped up, and that was... I thought he played a pretty well-rounded game for them. Did he make his mistakes? Sure, but when Georgia needed him to be the guy and hit some of those big plays, he was right on the money and no more so. And then on that 40-yard touchdown, well, I thought that was one of, if not the biggest momentum difference makers in the game that just turned the tide, no pun intended, into the fate of Georgia.
Man, you talk about Stetson Mitchell. He's been overlooked his entire life. He went to Georgia, obviously grew up in Georgia, in Atlanta. Told his parents at 3 years old he was going to be the quarterback for the Bulldogs. Left to a junior college because they kept recruiting over him. He returned. It was a third-string quarterback for a while. Injuries gave him some playing time, including this season where JT Daniels, who once again was recruited over him, went down early in the year with an oblique injury and gave the opportunity to Bennett, and he didn't give it up. Although last night, many were calling for Daniels to come in relief of Mitchell, who struggled early in the game. What a story, and what a finish to his college career as a senior. And I think he had himself quite a night. The visuals are one thing, but even the audio is pretty darn good. Here is Stetson Bennett this morning with Michael Strahan on ABC's Good Morning America.
MVP Stetson Bennett is joining us live. Stetson, good morning, my friend. How you feeling this morning after that incredible performance last night? Have you had a chance to get any sleep?
Yeah, you know, a few hours. Not many. I've been wondering about... Not many.
I don't think he got even 1 hour of sleep, Logan.
That was a lie.
Yeah. Hey, go on early morning television. In fact, you might still be drunk, but go ahead and go on the air.
And good for him, too, by the way. Being the underdog that he was already, absolutely go and enjoy that night. Like, don't even for a second think about holding it back or, you know, trying to play it cool. That's exactly what I would expect anybody in his position to do. But, I love the decision that to bring him on. You know he hasn't had an ounce of sleep. You know that he's been partying. You know he's been enjoying the moment with his teammates and his coaches and all of that. And I wouldn't expect any other answer from him going on early morning television to talk about that win last night. That's how he should go into it.
Yeah, a few hours.
Sure
not
that.
Many. I've been wondering about... not many.
And I'm telling you, the visuals are great. Like, you know, you look at yourself in the mirror when you're extremely hungover. It's exactly what he looked like. And you can tell he had himself a night. And as you say, good on him because he was the star of the show in that contest last night. And, man, a couple of things that stuck out for me. I mentioned the defensive battle. We talked yesterday about, you know, in that first game, how the Crimson Tide picked apart a defense who really gave up no touchdowns all season, 15 of them going into that game, and five of those touchdowns were against Alabama. We saw why that defense was the nation's best last night. Man, they were really, really good, and I know there was a lot working against Alabama. Example, they lost Mechie early in the year, who was a star receiver, and in that game, Jameson Williams went down in the second quarter, could not return, as you never like to see a player go down with a non-contact knee injury. And I know if you were following along on social media, Williams projected to be a first-round pick in the NFL draft this year as a junior. I do wonder. I mean, I think we know nowadays that NFL teams, and really in general, we don't see ACL injuries viewed the same. They used to be kind of a career threatening type thing, and now we're seeing players come back no problem, if not better, after torn ACLs. That just seems how common they are, which is really unfortunate because you miss a significant amount of time, but you can now come back and still be as effective as you were beforehand, which is great. So I do wonder what that means for his draft status. I still think he will declare for the NFL draft, and Logan, I wouldn't be surprised. It might not be the first round, but maybe a second round pick for Williams. But man, a lot working against Alabama. But take nothing away from the job the defense did for Georgia last night, because Kirby Smart had his guys ready to play.
Their defensive front was every bit as terrifying as they have been all season long. We talked a bit about this yesterday going into it. Was that game against Alabama earlier in the year simply an outlier, or did Alabama find something in that game to expose that Georgia defense? And they proved yesterday that it was simply an outlier. They are the best defense in the nation, and they showed it. They were disruptive. Bryce Young is probably covered in bruises today, because when he had time to make a throw and set his feet, 2 seconds later, he was absolutely blasted, whether it was a linebacker or on a stunt. They moved those defensive linemen around so well. The right side of that Alabama offensive line, you know, you're usually talking about high-end NFL prospect talent throughout the Alabama lineup. They couldn't stop anybody last night, and that makes it extremely difficult. And when they got those opportunities, especially late in the game, you know, I think about that pick six to seal it for Georgia late in this one. They made the most of those opportunities, and they made an Alabama offense that, yes, I think you're right, Will. You have to put in the caveat that they were without two of their most dangerous weapons in Williams and Mechie, and that absolutely could have made for a different game yesterday. But that being said, the guys that were out there had enough of a time to struggle with it, and Georgia wanted to make it a hard, grinding type of game. And at the end of the day, it was a defensive battle till late in the game. Georgia was able to break it open offensively, and really without that mysterious fumble that we talk about, we honestly could be going into today's show talking about Alabama not scoring a single touchdown in the national championship game, which it was something that I wouldn't have guessed in any way, shape, or form heading into it. So an absolutely outstanding performance from Georgia. Glad to see them snap the streak. They were more than deserving of it yesterday, going up against a juggernaut in Alabama. It was a fantastic game.
It was a really, really good game, and you mentioned it going into the contest on yesterday's show about how this has the potential to kind of be a showcase of football. Certainly was for the SEC, who we all know is the juggernaut when it comes to NCAA football. Here is Georgia head coach Kirby Smart, who wins as the boss of this alma mater. Here he is on the sideline with ESPN postgame, kind of asked about you know, the mindset and what this team was looking at going into the contest against Alabama.
I saw it at halftime. You know, there were people that said we weren't conditioned enough, and it pissed a lot of people off on our sideline, and they went to work. And before we came today, we burned the boats, and we came a fight. And I'm proud of these men.
You worked under Nick Saban for 11 seasons. You lost this game against Alabama in 2017. How much sweeter does that make this win?
Well, that one will be with me for a long time, but this one will be with me for much longer. I'm proud of the University of Georgia, the support we get there. A lot of credit to Alabama, Coach Saban. They had a lot of injuries. You know, they lost Jameson Williams in a tough situation, but our kids kept fighting and never doubted.
After 41 years, the University of Georgia are national champions. How does that sound to you?
I hope it doesn't take that long again. Go Dawgs.
That last question, you mentioned the streak. We talked about it yesterday, whether it was on headlines or when we were in focus of this game. 41 years, the last time they won the title was 1980. And you heard Kirk Herbstreit talk about it on the broadcast last night. I mean, you know, there's some Georgia fans sitting in front of them. It just kind of shows you what college football means to the United States. I mean, there was people crying in the stands, and you know, there was, you know, lifelong Georgia fans who are probably still celebrating today. It just kind of looks like, you know, more example of really the big picture and what it all means. And some of you might think it's crazy, but, you know, there was grown men in the stands and grown women in the stands yesterday, you know, crying and in tears after this title, and pretty cool moment for the University of Georgia.
It is certainly something that I think if you don't pay close attention to it, it might seem strange to the sport landscape north of the border here, or maybe just outside of the United States in general, the passion and the love that sort of comes with college football. It's an animal all its own. To me, it's sort of in a different way, Will, but in a way I kind of look at it like people who love the CFL. It's if you aren't close to it, if you haven't spent time around it, and you don't really dive into what makes it so special, then maybe to you on the outside, it looks so strange to put so much into it and have that sort of passion for it. But to me, it's part of what makes college football sports so great, and it's seeing the mix of the student sections and, you know, longtime alum or people who have lived in the community that have a connection to these young men and that are working on the football team staff or, you know, a couple of years and then moving on to different parts of their adult life. And you can tell how much it means to them. You heard Kirby Smart talking about what the scene would be like back in Georgia. And I saw some stuff on social media. It looked like they were having a great time celebrating it there. And it's just one of those special things in sports that maybe doesn't get the attention. I think it gets attention. I would say that's probably the wrong word, but maybe it just doesn't have the appreciation from all levels unless you really are born into it, Will, or have come to appreciate it over the years. Mm-hmm. It's something that's a little bit different than conventional sport fandom, I'd say.
All right, the final thing we'll do on this game, and I always like to do this because, you know, we can have some fun with big moments in sporting events, and I've pulled about five different calls here of that final pick six to seal it. I don't really have to tell you which one's Alabama radio, but I will anyways. But here's a bunch of different calls. I played the Georgia one coming in. Here is how it sounded nationally on ESPN radio.
Fakes an inside handoff to Robinson, throws to the near side, intercepted at the 21-yard line, and Keely Ringo bringing it back across midfield, across the 30, inside the 20, Ringo scores! The Georgia Bulldogs lead by two scores with 54 seconds to go!
How about how it sounded on Russian TV?
10. 5 секунд на розыгрыш. Брайс Янг. Еще бросок далекий. Перехват, который, если не будет нарушения правил, ставит точку в этом финале. Падай, падай, падай. Куда ты бежишь? Падай. Куда ты бежишь?
В эндзону убежал человек. А человек хорош.
I love the party, party, party. It's pretty good. ESPN Deporte.
Cambiando estaba Billingsley. Young. Interceptado. Y a ver hasta dónde lo puede devolver. Es Kelly Ringo. Sigue Ringo. Corta adentro. Ringo. Touchdown. Georgia.
And last and probably least, here is Alabama Radio.
Billingsley in motion, goes back to the right side. Again, Bryce stands back, looks, throws, it's intercepted. Caught by the Bulldogs at the 20, up the near side, 25, to the 50, to the 40. Down the near sideline, 20, to the 15, to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Georgia, on their second interception of the night.
Just deflated. Absolutely deflated. What one was your favorite, Logan?
I'd just say the Russian one.
Yeah, the party, 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 party.
Yeah,
party.
I think that was my favorite one.
Падай, 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 куда ты бежишь? Падай! Куда ты бежишь?
В эндзону убежал человек. А человек хорош.
It's pretty good.
If you hate Alabama, you probably love the last one. Because they're just
That's
crushed.
True. They are crushed. And you know what, though? I don't feel bad for them. They've had a lot of success. And,
they do a lot of winning there.
That's all they do is win. So,
and hey. Even then, you can sit there and go, okay, well, it was a former Alabama coach.
That's right.
One of Nick Saban's boys that won it. That's why you won it.
Pretty awesome game. Lived up to the hype. I loved it last night. Georgia wins 33-18, the final. We'll take a break. We'll shift our focus to the National Hockey League. League-wide next. Plenty happening. Lots of good games on the ice tonight. And a pretty good guest. Our friend David Amber, Sportsnet Hockey Night in Canada, will join us as we continue on The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.